As an industry, we've been witness to incredible achievements made by some of the most acclaimed names in the industry. But as established names rise to the top, new, inexperienced voices step up to make their voices heard. Welcome to Dev Diary Next Gen, the Dev Diary spin-off series that highlights the next generation of talent coming through in the games industry. My name is Paul James, and today I'm joined by Elliot Cox, and here's his journey so far. This episode of Dev Diary Next Gen has been available for a little while now on the Dev Diary podcast Patreon feed. So please check out the show notes, get all the details there, consider throwing a few bucks for the price of a coffee, one for the entire month. You will get access to Dev Diary Next Gen the moment it goes live, as well as early access to the normal episodes of the show as well, whenever possible. So go check out the Patreon, consider pledging a little bit of support. You'll help grow the show even further. I really appreciate it, and enjoy the show. So today I'm joined by Elliot. Welcome to Dev Diary Next Gen.
Thanks for having me.
It's going to be here. It's good to have you here, and I'm looking forward to having a bit of a chat. There's quite a few elements to your journey into the industry so far, and I'm kind of keen to pick through those with you. But as I say, thanks so much for coming aboard. And I should say a big thank you to a mutual of ours, Nick Pantis, who kind of helped link us up in the first place. Nick's incredible and an amazing guest, and I'm sure you're being recommended because you're deemed to be equally awesome, and I'm looking forward to having a chat.
I can only hope to live up to them. But yeah.
So this is Dev Diary Next Gen. It's an opportunity to kind of talk about the new faces that are coming into this industry as the established names kind of continue to build upon a legacy. There's new people coming through establishing their own. Elliot, you are one such person that fits that mold. And so I guess to give people a bit of a background into, I guess, your taste in games and what's led to this particular point, where does the journey with video games first begin for you? Do you recall what some of the first gaming experiences were that you ever had?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
I think one of the first ones I ever played was a motorbike racing game called Redline Racer.
Redline Racer?
Yeah. It was a weird one. Apparently, I looked it up recently, and apparently wasn't reviewed that well, but I sure enjoyed the hell out of it, despite not understanding that...
Oh my god, it's a Criterion game!
Yeah, slowing right. down in corners helps you. I, as a stupid child, did not understand that.
Mate, I'm still an adult and I can't get the hang of that. In a video game or behind the wheel in real life. Like, it's a real problem. I've got to stop getting tickets.
Yeah, so that was like one of the earliest games I played, besides stuff like Solitaire and Minesweeper that just came with the computer.
The classics.
Yeah, I was never a console person. Growing up, we only had a PC, so a lot of my early stuff includes like the Diablo games,
yes,
Unreal Tournament, Need for Speeds. Star Wars Episode 1 Racer was a favorite of mine. I remember me and my sister beating so many tracks in that, except for the last one. We just could never do it. And then a ton of RTS games as well. Age of Wonders, Age of Empires, obviously. And Warcraft and Starcraft were big ones as a kid.
No, some great choices there. And yeah, it's certainly you're not the only person I think that's been broken by that final track in Podracer. But I guess with it was a remaster that came out. I don't even know now because I think COVID's kind of warped timelines and stuff in my head a little bit. But somewhere within the last 20 years, there was a remaster of that game. Did that bring the family back together at all to see if you could crack it now with some years of experience and wiser heads behind you?
Unfortunately, not. I think my sister's kind of over her racing game times. I think she mainly played it because it was a Star Wars game.
That's fair.
more so than it was a racing thing. But yeah, we certainly talk about it and reminisce over it from time to time about the tracks that we found the hardest and stuff. Yeah.
No, good times. And I guess you rattled off a series of different games there, spanning a lot of different genres. Was there a particular franchise or genre or I mean, obviously, we kind of touched on you weren't much of a console person, but, you know, were there particular games or franchises, genres that you really stuck to as you were growing up that you kind of associated yourself with a little bit?
Initially, it was a lot of the racing games because it was, Redline Racer and Need for Speeds and stuff, played a ton of them. And then as I got a little older, it was more into the strategy games. So I played through the Warcraft 3 campaigns a couple dozen times, you know. And then StarCraft, I think I played through a couple times, but I don't think I really clicked as much with that as I did with Warcraft. And then after that, it was moving more into first-person shooters, which I'd played before in Unreal Tournament, but then getting really into them with stuff like Team Fortress 2, I think was the massive one. The Orange Box was just such a great, great product.
I wish I could share in that experience, but I made the foolish decision to buy that game on PS3. And so, because, you know, like, I was a PlayStation guy, I'm a, still am, I suppose, but picked it up on PS3, and that turned out to be the buggiest and messiest version of the collection of titles by quite some way. And I don't think Valve ever quite got it right, to my understanding. So to this day, I've got some less than ideal experiences behind me with a few of those games. Portal is an exception. I think that was mostly pretty good, and I think maybe a byproduct of what the game itself was. But yeah, there's a few experiences that I had there as someone who wasn't much of a PC guy and was experiencing some of these games for the first time that are probably less than, like, I think if I got into a forum or a conversation with someone who's really, like, people who know this franchise, who love this franchise, and I started saying the things that I've got to say about those games, I think I'd be screamed out of the room and there might be someone on my doorstep within the next hour or so. So I'll refrain because I think it's a byproduct of the platform as opposed to the games themselves.
Yeah, I think there was an understanding of, like, the console versions of those just being a little rough in places compared to the PC version. But yeah, I had a blast with that for years and years and years. Still launch it and play sometimes. But yeah.
And obviously, I mean, that period itself, and you mentioned, you know, titles within the Orange Box there, but that window of time for first-person shooters was a real launch pad, I think, for... I mean, we'd obviously seen them before, and we'd had these iconic and influential titles in the console space and the PC space prior, but I think it was kind of that period where... I don't know... Surely there's no one still that's trying to make an argument that says, you know, controls are equal to what you can achieve with mouse and keyboard. Surely not. But it did feel like the gap closed a little bit there, and I think, like, a lot of that came down to the way the games were designed, and so I think we saw a real growth in what first-person shooters could be, but also the number of them, because they felt like, I think developers and publishers felt like, oh, I can you know, take a shot at this now because I'm not speaking to one audience, I can speak to many. And so I think you kind of really engaged with that genre at a time when there was massive growth specifically. Did you find yourself clicking with the Call of Duties and those sort of franchises that really exploded in that period as well?
I played a lot of Call of Duty, particularly like Modern Warfare 2 and I think the first Black Ops.
Yep. About 2008, I think.
Yeah.
2006.
Wow, okay.
No? Oh, I don't even know anymore. No, that was... Anyway.
I really enjoyed them. But I think I just really clicked with TF2. So bombastic and colorful and different. And I just really liked messing around and just having fun with the ridiculous amount of stuff that you can do.
Yeah, that's fair. It was very much an open playground for a lot of people. Would you say, and I guess we've spoken about a range of different games there, but would you say any of those or any game that we've not discussed at this point was kind of a key part of your pursuit into game development yourself? Was it kind of a collection of experiences? How did we kind of get to this point where you're actually chasing a role within the industry, as opposed to just consuming the product?
Yeah, so I'd messed around with editors that came with stuff, like the Warcraft 3 world builder and the Neverwinter Nights campaign editor. That was another thing that I really jumped into. didn't do much with it, just a bunch of like, oh, what if I gave myself a really overpowered sword? That would be fun to slaughter a million goblins. really, like, just basic, ridiculous power fantasy stuff like that. But the game that made it click for me is actually Cave Story.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think that was the first time I really learnt about the people behind games, and learning that it was mostly a single person. I'm like, hey, I'm a single person. That's possible. That game is just such a great experience for me, and a reminder even to this day, just like of how fun and wonderful games can be. I played it, replay it through like once a year. I replayed it at the start of the year. It only takes me a couple of hours at this point, but it's still just a great experience, even though I know everything about
it. Yeah, all parts of it. And so I guess, how did we get to this point where you actually found yourself in the industry? So, I'll give people a little bit of background as I was kind of doing my research. You've done your Bachelor of Interactive Media at AIT in Sydney. You were working as a cashier at IGA for a while there. So how do we go from that, I guess, retail, the very kind of traditional retail experience in the supermarket, to programming interns and then everything that you've accomplished since?
Yeah, so despite knowing I wanted to make games, or like wanting to pursue that path in high school, I didn't really get a chance to do it straight out of there.
Yep.
I didn't get into any courses or anything, so I spent the next couple of years just doing casual or part-time work as a cashier, and then after a couple of years decided, I think I've had enough of this, I want to do something for me, and then undertook my course at AIT to learn to make games. And it was pretty wonderful. I had a really wide variety of topics and classes that I was able to undertake. Stuff like 3D animation, like film editing, audio design, cinematography, a whole bunch of like super interesting stuff to me, that kind of gave me a really good tool set and frame of reference for design, I think. When I finished there, I like started looking for a job.
Yep.
Wasn't able to find anything, and then the following year, this little thing called COVID happened, and everywhere just kind of exploded. And so that was a real interesting time to be looking for a job as a newcomer. And I attended the GCAPs that were online in 2021 and 2022. Met a few people there, and through one of those connections, I got a job working with TAFE New South Wales on some VR applications as a Unity developer. That was a lot of fun. And really my first time experiencing VR.
You hadn't really had much experience even as a consumer at that particular point?
No, I'd never even put on a headset before.
Plunged into the deep end.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun to work with that, and really interesting in the different kind of presentations and frames that you're working with. And while I was there, I was also still applying for more permanent positions, because that was just a contract.
Of course.
And then wound up getting a job as a junior game designer at Blowfish Studios.
Which is awesome. Now, I guess I wanted to pick through, and we'll get to Blowfish and more of the present day stuff shortly. But I did want to kind of rewind to that point where, it's COVID in particular, which, we crack the jokes about what COVID's like. It does kind of really impact potentially the ability to network in the way you want to, especially when you're that really early stage of your career, maybe just entering, and there's so much about the video game development scene, which is not necessarily the who sort of thing. Like, I don't think that it's that. I mean, there's aspects for sure, But and that I guess can be in any industry. But the networking component, the ability to share knowledge, the ability to, you know, have your name pop up because of a relationship with someone else, it's huge. And when that opportunity is kind of nipped in the bud a little bit, but also opens up in other ways, I think, like the fact that we're all kind of forced behind our computers allows you to maybe chat to someone not just the cold DM style thing, but, you know, you can break into these conversations a bit easier, and it's harder in other ways. Well, I guess, what was that whole experience like for you, trying to make a name for yourself, but not necessarily being able to meet and greet in the way that people so often have been able to?
I think I adapted to it really well, because most of my interactions with people have been online. I was pretty hermetical beforehand. Yep. Not really going out and doing much. And like most of the time growing up, I was like playing World of Warcraft or TF2. I was always kind of socializing through these online methods. And so when that happened, I just kind of found more groups. This Game Developers of Australia, which Nick Pantis runs,
yep.
And other kind of online groups like that. Just join in, learn what people, or just like listen to what people are talking about, and chiming in whenever I have something reasonable to add to a discussion. And yeah, that was great. I think, as mentioned, with Nick Pantis, the reason I became good friends with them is because they were looking for people to play Dead by Daylight. I said, that game looks kind of interesting. Sure.
Playing games online with people is a good opportunity to network, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was that kind of like impromptu game sessions with people, I think, that really kind of saved me in a way, because there was a while there that I was thinking like, I don't know if this is going to work out, like I'm not getting anything, stuff like that. I'm looking for like alternate career paths.
That makes sense.
But yeah, having that community around to encourage and stuff was just really, really helpful for keeping me motivated to keep trying, and to improve my portfolio and resume and stuff like that. I think another big part was also participating in a lot of game jams that were happening.
Yep.
Because they happen all the time anyway, and most were online anyway, or had like an online option. So just jumping into them and just making something small over a week, where then I wouldn't be doing anything anyway.
It helps, yeah. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess there's kind of two strings I'd want to pull there, but initially is some of those projects and the like that you've been working on, and it goes back to things like Electric Sheep and Buzzy Bee, but also through to more recent works like Sometimes, for example, which has been very well received as, it's a massive accomplishment. Congratulations on everything that you've achieved with that, and we'll talk, I guess, yeah, more about some of those specifics shortly. But being able to participate in these game jams and kind of throw ideas at the wall and be able to network with people off the back of it in ways that perhaps weren't possible in the pre-COVID period, because I think there was maybe more of the traditional model still at play in terms of people maybe talking face-to-face. I'm sure that, you know, that allowed you to be a bit of a sponge through that time in, like, the good complimentary kinds of ways.
No, absolutely. And being able to do game jams with people who had been in the industry for a while, like, oh, anyone want to team up for this? Sure, yeah. And just being able to take in so much of their experience was absolutely wonderful. And something that I hope when I'm more knowledgeable can kind of put out as well. Because I think that's really important, getting that first-hand experience and being able to just talk to someone like, hey, how do we do this? What's the best way of doing this? How does this thing usually work? Because I think that was a big blind spot for me. Just kind of all my stuff throughout my course at AIT was just kind of me The documentation wasn't good. It was really, really bad looking back at it. And there wasn't there wasn't any really consistency between any of the projects. So learning how to do that, I think, was really, really valuable at that time.
No, that's fair. Now let's talk about sometimes in maybe a little bit more detail here, because as I touched on a moment ago, it's been really, really well received, I guess, even in relation to some of the other titles, which are also fantastic. And people can, if they're keen, go check out sometimes on Itch, and I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes for people to go and check that out. But how did the idea come about in the first place? And then with the reception since, how's that sat with you?
When I wrapped up my course in 2019, I was in a real bad place mentally. I was suffering from burnout. I'd been through a breakup. My grandmother had died like 6 months prior. And then the entire rest of that year was spiraling. It was a real bad time until I finally started therapy at the end of the year. And kind of sorting through those emotions, I wanted to channel that into something creative. So I'd come up with a bunch of different ideas of things I could do. None of them really were really working or clicking for me. And then around the time of GCAP and the AGDAs of that year, there were a couple games that I played that used a vignette style approach, just like small, really small focused gameplay sections. I went, hey, I think that could work.
The acclaimed Battlefield 1, for as an example.
I think the first one that comes to mind is Spider's Strike Through. That was a real inspiration for the kind of format that I wanted to use. And so I was able to kind of work on that style of approach. And I really, really, really wanted to continue to focus on my own mental health journey and how I would kind of convey that.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't really done such a like personal project. It made me feel quite vulnerable.
Of course.
Like thinking about doing that and putting it out into the world, that just seemed insane to me at sometimes. It just kind of, I started focusing on like, okay, here are all the negative kind of feelings that I've been through. How would I represent them through gameplay? And then I had a bunch of different ideas for them, prototyping them, seeing which ones worked and which ones didn't, and then thinking like, this is just too miserable. This doesn't really accurately describe like all the things that I felt, because it was missing the thing that can happen with the kind of positive emotions, like, oh, you know, eat a chocolate bar, feel good. But then when I was in that really bad place, it was eat a chocolate bar, hate myself, like,
yeah, right,
spiraling into self-destruction kind of thing. And I think that was a really important thing to convey in the game as well. Because it's not just monotonous bad, it's real easy looking back on it now to see like all the good things that were happening to me, like my mind just twisted them into like, yeah, just
negative. It's the old saying of not being able to see the forest from the trees. Like when you're living it, you may not be able to see those things that for everyone else are sometimes blatantly obvious. And that's, I guess it's not an uncommon sentiment. I guess I'm sorry for the place that you're in, but it's I guess if nothing else, it has spawned this amazing title that people should absolutely go and check out. And I've heard musicians talk about the idea, and I guess this is in relation to you talking about kind of feeling quite vulnerable in terms of putting that out there. I've heard musicians talk about, you know, when they write a song and they put it out there, it's no longer my song that I might have written about my personal scenario that's played out, but it's now ours or potentially even your song. And I'm wondering if it's maybe a similar sort of idea here where you've put together this title that obviously, you know, deeply related to things that you were experiencing, but by putting it out there for the world, and it's hopefully, you know, hopefully it still, I guess, carries the weight and importance to you that it did at the time of development. But at the same time, potentially the audience and the you know, portions of the community that have had the opportunity to play that have deeply related to that as well, because maybe they too were or are going through similar sort of things to what you were at the time. And all things going well, that's been a really positive thing for people to be able to see that and go, okay, it's not just me, and I've been able to maybe enjoy the experience here. And it's kind of, if it's even impacted one person in such a way that they go and change the trajectory that they're on, then you've done something incredible.
Yeah, I think something that really like makes me tear up is like when people say that they connected with it, because it's such a bittersweet feeling, because it means that they have gone or are going through something like that, and that just sucks.
Yeah,
like I'm glad that they got it, and I'm glad that, you know, maybe it helped them in some way. But and knowing that of like friends and family as well, that's a sucky thing. Cause there's all this whole facade that people put up about being fine, which is also partially what the game is about. And like, cause for the longest time I was in denial, like, yeah, I'm doing okay.
Oblivious to it. Yeah. Or putting the head in the sand.
Stubborn, yeah. and then, so I think I've been really, really happy with how it's gone. I wasn't creating it with the intent to do all this stuff with it. I was only ever creating it for me as an exercise, as a cathartic exercise.
Yeah, of course.
I basically used the actor's submission deadline as a delivery date. Like, I need to have it done by this. Which really, really motivated me to get it done. And then it got nominated, and that was insane. I wasn't expecting that at all. And then, yeah, recently it was at the Free Play Awards as well, which I was just so honored by. Like, and there's some of the most surreal experiences, being in a room full of people who have been in the industry for, like, so much longer than me. All these people that I've kind of looked up to since I've started learning, you know, who in Australia is making games, like all clapping at my little game. Like, that's gonna stay.
It's a real honor. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an incredible achievement, and to do it, I guess, so early in your career, to have that sort of moment. I'm sure that's going to continue to have a lasting impact on you, and it's well deserved. Sometimes is a wonderful, wonderful title that, as I said, I've linked in the show notes for people to go check out, and you should absolutely do so. Congratulations on all the work with that, Elliot. It's incredible. The other half, with, you know, I guess maybe a kind of clumsy change of pace here, but the other half is what you referenced there also with the starting at Blowfish. And so how did that opportunity actually come about in the first place? Off the back of, you know, pandemics and all those sorts of things that were going on.
Yeah, so they were going through, they were going through some upscaling and were looking for junior designers, which is not an opportunity that comes along very often. And so I applied. I didn't think I heard anything back. Then I checked my junk, my junk email, and then it said, "Congrats, you've got a test to do," and it was due the following day. So I spent 8 hours the next day working on it, submitted it, and then through that got an interview. I did a couple of them, and then an offer. So yeah, it was just kind of being aware and applying.
Look, I don't know if you're a spiritual person or not, but I'm sure there's plenty of people listening to this one that might be sitting back saying there's some little hand of fate hanging over the top of you there that ensured that you checked your junk, your spam that particular day, and it's worked out okay for you since.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the exact feeling because I was just like, I wasn't playing anything, I wasn't doing anything, I was just kind of seeing it, and I was like, oh, I'll check that junk email. I'm like, oh, what's this? Oh, okay. I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
And yeah, worked out okay, and here you are with Blowfish these days. Now, I guess I'm mindful of things that we can and cannot discuss when it comes to employed gigs, but we've got an early access title that's out there in Phantom Galaxies. What was that like? Did you jump straight into that particular title upon arriving? How did things kick off once you were in the door?
I was actually introduced to multiple titles that they were working on at the time. And since then I've never been on one project the entire time. I was kind of bouncing across multiple. But Phantom Galaxies is kind of has been the biggest one for the studio. Where most people at the company have touched it in some way, shape, or form. Everyone's kind of been involved with that. So, yeah.
No, that's awesome. And I guess to be involved in a title that's kind of... I guess we are seeing this boom in games themselves that are kind of exploring the early access model and what you can glean from player feedback in those sorts of formats as opposed to even the more traditional demo sort of experience that people might put out there. What have you and, I guess, more broadly, the team learnt through this early access period? Because for context, for anyone unaware, Phantom Galaxies went into early access on the 15th of November last year, 2023. So it's been a few months now. We're getting close to closing in on 6 months of the game being out there in that form. And I'm sure there's lots of data that gets collected. I'm sure there's lots of even personal reflection that you get to have seeing it out there and potentially seeing how people are reacting. What's that period been like? Or are you so kind of transfixed by other works that you may or may not be able to discuss, and I won't put you in a compromising position there, that you've not necessarily had too much of an opportunity to wade through that?
I mean, I think it's been a big point for the studio, and like I have spent a fair bit of time doing some work on it. So it was kind of, didn't get a great response initially. I think we had a lot of negative reviews, and I think it caused a lot of people to really look and reevaluate what the project should be and like the initial steps that we needed to take. So hopefully that's all coming together. Learning from that and kind of moving on, trying to figure a path forward for it.
No, that's awesome. And obviously, yeah, it is part of the nature of the early access models. There's so much data that can be collected and feedback, and there's, you know, you're going to get Steam reviews, good, bad, or otherwise, and how do you kind of pass through the information that's there and work out what's someone with an axe to grind, what's someone who's actually putting something out there that is constructive, even if they're potentially feeling negatively about the game. You know, trying to collect meaningful stuff that's going to be additive to the work going forward can be a bit of a challenge at times. And I guess when you are in this sort of position, I guess how do you personally, you know, look at that when when there are, and you kind of touched on the fact that, you know, kind of the initial response was more on the negative side, how do you sit back and try and digest that when it's less than ideal, the feedback?
I think I just don't really look at it much. I'm a junior designer. I don't really get to make the big decisions that need to be made. I get pointed in a direction and told to go. I'm kind of lucky. Lucky to be ignorant of it.
No, that's fair enough. Well, obviously, with that and all other works that are going on at Blowfish, and it's a busy studio. There's lots of cool things that are coming out of there. And people should absolutely go look at laundry lists of titles that come out. And I guess laundry list can be a little bit derogatory, but there's quite a number of fantastic titles that have come out of the studio over the years. So people should absolutely go and check out all that's kind of going on there. They might be able to glean some info into upcoming titles and those sort of things that you may or may not be involved in. Implore people to go and kind of keep tabs on all that's going on at the studio there. But I guess when it comes to Phantom Galaxies in the short to long term, I hope that continues to kind of build in that positive direction, and that you and the team can kind of turn it into exactly what you'd all envisaged it to be upon its 1.0 launch.
Yeah, hopefully.
We'll wrap things up here by going through a few quick questions at the end there. Is there anyone, and we've touched on a few different people that you've worked with and along the way so far, is there anyone who really inspires you in the way that you go about your work? Is it someone you work with day to day? Is it someone you've looked at from afar? A combination of both? Is there anyone that kind of inspires you in your game development journey?
It's hard because I don't think there's a person that I kind of look to. I guess someone that I always kind of look up to and the team around them is Yoshi P and yes, the Final Fantasy XIV team. I'm a massive addict of that game. And the work that they did to relaunch and recover that game from the state it was in, and just the constant sense of gratefulness for the position that they're in. You can really feel it in their work, how grateful they are to be continuing to make it and for where it is. There's even some quests that have been added in the last couple of years where the devs are like explicitly saying thank you so much for like letting us do this.
They're not shy about it, which is
no,
awesome.
Not at all. And like their fan fests too are just really wonderful. I think they're really on top of like they're only here because of the community and being given a chance. And that's kind of baked into the philosophy of the game, like in terms of the story as well. There's a lot of second chances given to characters, and I think it's a really beautiful.
No, that's fantastic. Have there been any particularly valuable lessons that you've picked up and learnt along the way so far?
Fail hard, fail fast is a big one.
Fail hard, fail fast.
Like, just make stuff. Make something nonsensical. Make something in a week. Do game jams. Like, that kind of, like, you don't need for it to be a winner. No one's ever gonna like hit home runs all the time. And that kind of, it's really freeing just knowing that like I can spend time working on something. It may not be worthwhile. It may not like produce something worthwhile, but I'm gonna learn something from it.
No, that's awesome.
And that approach has really helped.
I like the actual motto though, the fail hard, fail fast. It's a short, sharp one. It's quite to the point. I enjoy that. Some fun ones as we start to wrap up now. If you could be credited for any game, retroactively add your name into the credits in any capacity, can be as simple as special thanks. What game would you love to have been a part of working on?
That's a real good question.
And we've mentioned so many. I mean, we just obviously discussed Final Fantasy 14, but we go back to all those games from the early years and those early experiences. So you've got a fair range of high quality choices there. Is there anything in particular that you wish you could have been a part of? Even if it's for one element in the game, maybe an otherwise rubbish... I don't want to be too derogatory, but like an otherwise rubbish game, but with one particular element that was just amazing. Like, I wish I could have done that. Like, that's cool.
that's a real hard question. I think there's a game that I played from the Toho series around the same time that I played Cave Story. And it's one of the like offshoot games, so it's not explicitly a shoot 'em up. It's a game where instead of like killing bosses by shooting them, you have to take photos of them with a camera and photos of their attack patterns. It's really weird, a really cool twist on it, and like, yeah, I guess I'd have to say Shoot the Bullet by Zoom.
I'm fascinated by that one. Oh, it's actually one I think I'll have to look up a little bit myself afterwards. The concept intrigues me. If you could go and replay any game, strike it entirely from your memory, there's nothing residual left over, you can get to experience this game completely fresh, what game would you love to play all over again with that purity behind you?
That's another real good one.
Yeah, and again, you know, there's multiple different ways we can look at this, whether it's because of a gameplay aspect that was incredible, whether it was a narrative beat that just floored you. There's a whole bunch of different... I mean, it could be the whole experience. It was just ticking every single conceivable box.
I think...
Anything stick out?
One that I played recently, I guess, would probably be Nier Replicant.
Oh, yeah?
A remake of the 2008, I think.
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark.
Like, playing through that and getting all the endings, that was so cool. It's so well done. It's, yeah. The things that they do with the endings are really, really cool. And I think playing through that and, like, experiencing that, I'm just like, this is awesome.
No, that's a fantastic choice. I've played Nier Replicant. I haven't played through multiple endings of Nier Replicant. I know that means that I'm not really getting the full experience unless I've played multiple endings of Nier Replicant. So one of these days I'll have to go back. I'll probably have to... would you recommend that I probably have to play, like, do the first playthrough again to then appreciate 2 and 3 if there's a bit of a gap between playthroughs?
Not really.
No? Cool.
I think one of the weakest parts of it is there's only a few really small things added in with the replays.
Yep.
Like, nothing is really new with the combat or anything. You get to keep all your upgraded weapons, so by the third one you're just like one-shotting everything,
bulldozing everything. Like,
you're just running over everything, and yeah, that's fine. And the stuff that they do add is really interesting. It just like, it's pretty small. You can kind of just continue it again.
No, that's awesome. Well, at least you've soothed a heart here, and just that I don't have to go the full grind all over again. But a fantastic choice as well. So, good selection. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, Elliot, and to kind of, I guess, learn about this journey so far. It is still in its early days, but you've achieved and accomplished so much already. If people want to learn more of what you're up to, about future projects, all those kinds of things, where should people go?
I post some stupid stuff on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, at Elliot_Cox_. My games are put out on itch.io all of the time. Just Elliot Cox on there as well. Yeah, I think that's basically it.
No, that's fantastic. And as I said before, people should, I mean, I guess the website there, the itch.io link will get you to sometimes, and the multiple other games that you've worked on as well. So people should absolutely go check all of that out. We'll give you all the details there. Check the show notes for that. But as I said, Elliot, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure to chat and to learn about the journey so far. We touched on before, you come highly recommended from Nick, and they've got that right. You've absolutely nailed it. Thank you so much for coming on the show and being an amazing guest. I really appreciate it, and wish you nothing but the best going forward.
Thank you so much. It was great to do.
And listeners, as always, thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. That concludes this entry of Dev Diary Next Gen. Be sure to subscribe to this feed, share it with your friends, and give us a 5-star review to help boost the show up the charts for greater exposure. If you have any people you'd like me to reach out to an interview, then please find me at Paul James Games on Twitter to help me get in touch with them. Until the next episode, however, that's been Elliot's story. Thank you much for listening, and I'll see you next time.